welcome to the TFB Spotlight interview series. My name is Gabrielle Fontaine, and I'm so happy to have Tracy Irwin of TI Accountancy with us today. And she's from the UK. And just as a side note, if you've gone through some of the interviews on the TFB Spotlight, we've had people from all over the world. So we're really happy to have Tracy join us as part of that international bookkeeping group that we learn how to run our business and move it forward in a way so we can build a bookkeeping business that we love. And you may notice that Tracy is in an office that has empty shelves behind her. That's because she's just moved to her brand new office. So we're going to hear about that as well. So thank you so much, Tracy, for joining us.
Glad to have you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, I know we have a lot to cover. So why don't we just jump right into the interview, because I am dying to hear the details of your story. I know some of it, but I don't know all of it. And I probably should mention that Tracy is an award-winning bookkeeper as well, or bookkeeping business owner, because I met her at the Profit First Global Con back in October, and she was an award winner. She was, I believe you were the member of the year, correct?
I am member of the year, 2015, yeah.
Congratulations, and that's the first one.
So,
fantastic. So let's jump right in. Why don't you tell me a little bit about the background in your business and how did you get started as a bookkeeping service?
Well, I got started into bookkeeping when I was 21. I was a single parent at 19, and I needed to find a job to be able to pay for me and my daughter. And so I worked for an electrical contractors for 12 years and I really enjoyed it. The company, I grew with the company. So when I started, they had 16 men that were employed, and by 2000, and that was in 1996. Mm. And in 2002, we had 150 lads working at Southfield. So I kind of grew with the company, and it was a nice way to, as an office manager, it was a great way to grow my career. And in 2002, I was having a drink with a couple of friends, and we were talking about payroll, and they were both running companies, and they weren't actually paying their staff properly through the government. They were paying them cash, because at the time you either went to an accountant or you did it yourself, and they couldn't do either. And I said, well, if I did payroll cost effectively, would you pay them correctly? And they went, yeah, we really want to pay them correctly, we just can't. So me and my sister designed a leaflet over one weekend. We went out and posted them one Sunday, watched my dog around my local town and posted. So, and then within 6 weeks, I had 20 clients.
Oh my goodness.
Just payroll clients. And I still worked for electrical contractors and I really enjoyed it. But word of mouth, and I was doing payroll at home, nights and weekends. And then in 2005, one of my clients said that her son was renovating a barn. He was really, really good at what he did, but he couldn't keep up with his bookkeeping at all. And because we did her payroll, could I do her bookkeeping, his bookkeeping? And my mum had been poorly, she'd had a heart attack, and I didn't want my mum to go back to the stressful job that she had. So I actually asked her if she'd like to come and work for me. So my mum was at home doing the bookkeeping and the payroll, whilst I was at work as an electrical contractor doing the office manager's job. And that worked well for a couple of years, and it grew when my mum got her, you know, she was working for me. And then in 2007, my mum said that she had too much work to do, and that she decided that it was about time that I became fully self-employed. I did. I handed my notice in. I mean, things had changed within work. My boss had sold the company. My job role had changed, that kind of thing. So it just felt like the right time.
So Tracy, I have a question. So yeah. when you were bringing in these 20 clients to do the bookkeeping, that was for your employer?
No, the payroll, that was for me. So I registered.
So it was your own side business, basically.
It was a little side business. Okay. My actual boss, he said that that was fine for me to do. Okay. They were happy for me to do payroll. So they were all just payroll clients. Mm-hmm. And then we got bookkeeping clients after 2005. And my mum being a bookkeeper as well anyway, so it worked really, really well.
Okay, I see.
So in 2007, I went fully self-employed. And for 3 years, it was just me and my mum. in our biggest bedroom in the house, and we really enjoyed it. And then in 2010, my aspirations changed. I met two gentlemen. One is an actual mentor. He's a gentleman called Nigel Bottrell, who owns the Entrepreneur Circle. And the other one is my husband. And I think having the influences of both of them, I used to, when I was working from home, it was always, I had the thought of, it wasn't just my roof, the roof over my head I was risking, it was always Elaine's as well. Mm-hmm. And actually, and so my risks were always small. They don't need to be small anymore. So I took bigger risks. And since 2010, our business has doubled every year.
Wow.
So, and as you say, we're just in brand new offices now. And so I've gone from having just me and my mum in 2010 to now having, on the 4th of January, I will have 12 members of staff.
Wow. That's fantastic. What a story. And that's only in 5 years. That's
5 years. That is the growth, is the 5 years. I kind of, I enjoyed the bookkeeping side of things. And I still do. I just don't get to do it anymore.
I am a
business owner rather than a bookkeeper.
Yeah, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that, I think.
Okay.
Because most of the audience, I think, are either solo freelance bookkeepers or those who have small firms, maybe a few staff member, virtual staff member, and they may be managing some and then still doing some of the bookkeeping. So mm-hmm. maybe your transition on that would be a little helpful. But following our basic outline that we usually follow, something that's interesting, now when you started, you were working at another firm, you were working as a bookkeeper?
I was working as an office manager, so I did bookkeeping, payroll, job costings, procurement. The job was looking after an electrical contractors. So
Right, and that's how you got in with all the contractors at the beginning. But what about like your educational and credential background and your mom's? You said your mom was already a bookkeeper as well. Did you both have degrees in accounting, or how was it that you were qualified as bookkeepers?
I'm an accountant now, but I wasn't when I worked for electrical contractors. Yeah. It kind of grew. So my mum was a qualified bookkeeper. And I got my bookkeeping qualifications while I worked when I was younger and as looking after Elaine, which was quite difficult. And then when I set up my own practice, I then went back to college and did my accountancy. So now I'm a qualified accountant as well.
Ah, okay. I see. So would it be the equivalent that you know of here as we have CPAs in the US? So you're an accountant?
I think so. Yeah. Yes, I'm a management accountant. So.
Okay. Okay, it sounds like it. That's what it sounds like. So what would you say was the biggest challenge? I mean, you went really fast. Was the speed of your growth part of the challenge, or was it more mindset in, like you said, you had to think bigger?
Customer service was the biggest challenge, because when you do a really good job for a handful of people and they tell more people and then they come on board too, you want everybody to have the same level of customer service. And in a growing practice, the quicker you grow, the quicker your weaknesses show. And that was the biggest challenge, was making sure our weaknesses were addressed immediately and fixing them and reviewing them and constantly evolving, so that every time we found something that didn't quite work in a growing practice, we fixed it and sorted it and moved on.
So how did you fix those weaknesses in customer service?
We have a not right first time form. So if anybody ever comes across something that's not happening right, or a client is concerned or anything, we have a form that's filled out. All the people that deal with that client have an urgent meeting. We all get together and we look at the processes. So we do like a little flow chart to say, this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened. We don't lay blame on people. We lay blame on processes, and we find where our processes are going down, and we fix it. We apologize to the client. We usually buy them chocolate or a cake or something to say sorry, and to thank them as well. Because if the clients don't give you feedback, then don't know something's going wrong. So when the client gives you feedback, we actually thank them and say, hey, thanks, because now we fixed that, we're going to move on, and you know, is a cake to enjoy, and they usually like that. So
yeah, I find giving food gifts work well, especially when chocolate is involved.
Yeah, definitely.
Excellent. So it sounds like you definitely learned that in order to deal with that challenge, you started documenting and you have procedures, like you said, the flowcharts. So that's great.
Yeah, we had all our procedures anyway. We continue to get more procedures every day. So it's a continual process. But yeah, you need processes in the business to grow.
Yes, I agree. And I think that's a weakness of many freelance bookkeepers as well, is because they figure, well, especially if they're solo, that they figure, well, I know how to serve this client. I know how to do that. But if something ever happens to you or someone needs to help you out, or you want to grow your business and start taking on colleagues, even when it was just you and your mom, there probably had to be some kind of procedures laid out.
Yeah, definitely.
So that you know what's what. So yeah. Excellent. Another question too, you made a little bit of reference to it about mentors, where you weren't trying to figure this all out yourself. At what point did you start looking for a mentor?
When you're on your own and there's just you, you have a peak and trough of, you know, you go out networking, you get more and more work, you get really busy, and then suddenly you have to be in the business to do the actual work, mm-hmm. and then the new stuff. So it's like learning to have a tap that you can turn on when you need it, mm-hmm. for the flow of clients. And I went to a business show and watched a gentleman, like I said before, who's called Nigel Bottrell, mm-hmm. and I just felt like he was talking to me. Mm-hmm. It was everything that I kind of knew I should be doing but wasn't particularly doing. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, when we were at the Profit First convention, I talked about the fact that when I come to work in the morning, I spend 90 minutes on my business before I work in my business. And that is the biggest thing I attribute my growth to, because, mm-hmm. you know, you can come into work and you can come into the office and you turn your emails on, and there's so many people who want your time, whether it be clients, whether it be staff. And before you get to that point, you really do need to concentrate on what's, you know, the most important thing to grow a business is to get new clients. Mm-hmm. And if you don't do that and put that as a priority first thing in the morning, then it's not, your business will eat it up, because you're constantly working in your business because it's busy and it's growing and so finding that 90 minutes in the morning is the most important thing I could give to anybody to actually work on your business to make it grow.
That's great advice, and it is something in the training lesson of my membership. That's what I mentioned in one of the parts of the lesson. Yes, because I found it in my own business. When I make time, set time aside regularly to work on my business, it's almost magical how it will grow. And it's just because of the consciousness and working on it, and you do it every single day. I had recommended once a week. I think I need to up my game now too, see? So thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
So I had here, so what tip do you wish someone had shared with you when you first started your practice? So what do you know now that you wish you knew then?
I can't do everything. I think that's the biggest tip. I think when you're growing and it is just you, you have all these different hats, and I think recognizing that actually being able to outsource things, whether it's in-house to a member of staff, or if it's out and actually outsourcing it to a VA or somebody, like, we've got our own designer and everything now, because I used to love messing about with adverts and things, but actually it's not the best use of my time. So that's, I think if I could have understood what the best use of my time was, then it would be, I would have not wasted many, many hours that I probably wasted designing adverts or, mm-hmm. you know, and do, like, it's kind of like practicing what you preach to your clients, because you're telling your clients, don't waste your time doing your own bookkeeping, let us do it, and then we go and do everything for ourselves, so it's kind of just recognizing that, and I think I've probably wasted and procrastinated a lot over the years.
This, for me personally, this is a challenge. It's really hard to let go of certain pieces, and some of it is because of quality. I know I'm a perfectionist, recovering perfectionist.
No, me too.
Okay, so how did you get yourself to do that? How did you get yourself to let go and start delegating?
It is hard. In my old office, which I could show you something next door, but in my old offices, I have a motto on the wall, which I'm hoping to get in here as well, that says, life isn't about waiting for the storm to pass, it's learning to dance in the rain. And for me, that just encompasses everything of the fact that good is good enough, and you don't have to wait for it to be perfect. You know, to have an okay letter, sales letter that goes out, is going to get you much more better return on investment than the perfect one that's just not there in your drawer. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's kind of like, it's just learning that you just do stuff. So that when you actually do delegate to somebody else, and we found that, you know, if we video stuff, or and the processes help as well, mm-hmm. that actually if they've got something to follow, whether it be on video or on paper, that actually they don't take as long to actually get up to speed. And if the quality's not there, you know, some people get better and some people don't, and there is a turn of staff now and again, but you know, you've got to give everybody a chance. So And I enjoy getting to know people's personalities as well. So,
did you find that to be a challenge as well, to find skilled people to delegate to, or were you relying more on your processes so that you would train them instead of expecting them to already have the skills?
We learned the hard way, I think. We expected people to already have the skills when we were early growth. We wanted people to hit the ground running, and it kind of came back to bite us now and again. But now we have proper training processes. We have an induction that lasts an entire day so that they understand our ethics, the principles, what's expected of them, and then they start a training process. So it is, we have slowed our training process down. I think that's something that as a bigger practice we have, it's a benefit that smaller practices probably don't have the same, because I remember when I used to take people on, I needed them to hit the ground running.
And to get the work done.
Yeah, because I needed the work done. So I think, you know, as you grow in, you do become, I'm a bit more lucky, I think, that I do have that. And I have an office manager, a payroll manager, and an accounts manager that look after them now, so.
Yeah, so if you mastered that, that's to you, because I haven't figured that one out totally yet either.
Delegated it to somebody else.
Well, I did hear on, actually I think it was the Profit First podcast, I believe, that I just heard at the time of this recording, was very recent, that they did with Chris Ducker, who has,
of
course,
heard that yet.
Oh, it's very good. And I believe he mentions, which he mentions it in his book, but it, I don't know, somehow it was different just hearing him say it, that he said you should make three lists if delegation is a difficult thing. So obviously I was listening.
Yeah.
That he said you should have three lists. And the first one are the things that you, I think, see if I get this right, the things that you hate to do, the things that you're not good at is the second list. And then the third list are the things that you are doing but you really shouldn't be doing, and you know that. And he said that's you, then you draw from that list in order to know what to delegate, and you, it's a gradual process, it's bit by bit. So
yeah, when my office manager came on board, obviously I didn't just give her absolutely everything, I gave her bit by bit. And what I actually did was, for a time, I actually wrote everything I did in a day, and then I'd pick a couple off the list and go, I shouldn't be doing that. And I gave them gradually, so that it is a gradual process. You can't just turn up one day and think I'm not going to do anything. My job role now is sales and customer service. I don't I actually don't do any day to day bookkeeping anymore. So
I think that's beautiful. But I hope everybody pays attention to that. That basically Tracy has gotten herself to the point where she's the owner of the business, but her number one and only job really is the marketing. and pulling in more clients, yet she has all the bookkeeping knowledge, so she can speak intelligently with the client and identify what the client really needs and work with them, yet she's not the one actually doing it. She's able to hand it off to her staff, and likely, you know, you hire staff that they just love doing the bookkeeping. They have no interest in even starting a business.
No, I've got meticulous staff that, you know, they're fantastic at the bookkeeping. So probably a better job than I could do, to be honest.
Yeah, and that I've heard that too, that sometimes it's better to just hire people who are better at the job than you ever were. So
I agree.
So where are you now in your business, and what are the goals that you have ahead of you? It sounds like you've just reached one of your big goals.
I've been thinking a lot about our goals for 2016, because for the last 3 years, it's been about new clients, bigger numbers, more staff. Mm-hmm. 2016 is going to be very, very different, especially with finding Profit First this year. We are going to concentrate on serving the clients we have better. Mm. So we want a larger return on investment for the clients that we have, not by putting their prices up, but by giving them more value so that they will pay us more. So it's kind of offering, our packages have changed very slightly. So we have our package for our bookkeeping and accountancy package. Our core package is the Profit First. And we've added a full financial director package, which is the only clients that get me personally in their business. So it's kind of, it's just about finding ways in which you can help the clients you've got more rather than trying to find new clients. And that's where our aim is going to be for 2016. So
that's excellent. So it's growing from within, really.
Yes. Yes.
And your role is changing, so you're not just the salesperson anymore. You're actually going to be of the work.
I'm going to go out to clients once a quarter to actually be their part-time FD. I don't know if it's the same. It is the same word in America, isn't it? Director.
It's similar, I think, because we use CFO, Chief Financial Officer, outsourced CFO.
Right, well, that's what I will be doing for other companies. And I think the confidence to be able to do that has grown within me growing my practice. I don't think I would have felt confident enough to do that for other businesses without growing my own. So,
That's excellent. Wow, that's great. And you bring to mind too, are you working, just as a side question, are you working virtually with clients, or is it really just clients that are in your local area?
No, I've got clients all over the UK. In fact, I've got clients all over Europe, because I've got one in Estonia. I work a lot on Skype, but from where I'm kind of, if you class Scotland as in like the British Isles, I am in the middle. So actually, for me to get to the very top of Scotland is 5 hours drive, and for me to get to the bottom of the UK is 5 hours drive. Mm. So for me to get to anywhere isn't actually a massive deal. So I do drive to London quite often, or the train. So it is a lot of it's virtual. The day-to-day bookkeeping is all virtual. We don't go into any clients' offices. Even our local clients, their stuff comes to us. Everything's done virtually by the Profit First. I go down and have Profit First days with clients who are on the Profit First package, and then they get handed over to the rest of my staff, and then the FD stuff's going to be done by me once a quarter.
Very nice. Very nice. Excellent. So the bottom line is you're growing by upgrading the services that you have with your existing clients.
Yeah.
That's great. That's a very lucrative path to go down. So if you had to start over from scratch today, what would you do differently?
I wouldn't sell time for money. I'm totally honest. If that's not honest opinion. However, I love my company. I love the fact that we help clients with their bookkeeping. It is time for money. I can't get away from that now. It's already done. I think I would go into a business that doesn't sell time for money if I could start again.
Interesting.
Yeah. But I don't know. I don't do anything differently. I really do love helping my clients. The satisfaction of seeing their bottom line grow is much more satisfaction than watching my own grow, because we know we've facilitated that, because I know that they're not good at their numbers, and we are. So it's just helping people understand their accounts. Just, yeah, it's brilliant. Love it.
Excellent. And so it sounds like that you would do the same what you have done.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, well, that's good. How do you think our industry has changed, and what challenges and opportunities do you see ahead for bookkeeping services?
In the UK, our self-assessment tax returns that see in the US, everybody does a tax return, don't they, regardless of whether they're employed, self-employed, a company, anything. The UK doesn't work like that. So people who are on, who are employed, are on a scheme called Pay As You Earn, and they don't have to do a tax return. Nobody does a tax return. So if you're self-employed, you have to do one, and they're trying to get away from those so that they submit once a quarter rather than once a year. And because of this, accountancies, people are saying that accountancies are going to die because just people are just going to submit stuff online. I don't agree at all. I can see the shift in accountancies going from being data entry submission people to being advisories. People want to know how to grow their business. They want to know what's the best things that they can do to get their return on investment. It's not, they don't, you know, for me, I'm a management account, so, you know, year-end accounts are just HMRC's way of knowing how much tax you need to pay. They're not they're redundant as soon as they're done. Whereas the management accounts and the KPIs that you can do on a week, on a monthly basis to help other businesses grow, that's what's important. And that's, it's continual. And that's why my, that's why I run a bookkeeping company and not an accountancy. Because for me, the bookkeeping is so much more important. You need to know your numbers on a monthly basis so that, you know, and as speaking to other bookkeepers, you know, to be able to give somebody their numbers constantly to actually help to facilitate their company to grow, that's why we do what we do.
Yes, and I agree. I think the key role that we have is that, at least here in the States, that so many small business owners don't understand their numbers. No. They know they need, and for us, as you mentioned, they need to do their numbers, their bookkeeping, in order to do the taxes. And for many of the small businesses, that's the motivation. For them, they don't know, which is why we love Profit First. They don't know if they have any money. They just go look at their bank account and see if I have some money, okay. Yeah. But they really are in the dark. But like you said, they're a business owners. They really want to, they're entrepreneurs. They want to grow their business, but they're crippled because they really don't understand their numbers, or their numbers are a total mess, and they're strangled. They can't do anything unless they have the numbers in order and they understand them. And it's that piece, that understanding how to use them, is the piece that we as bookkeepers can provide for them.
Definitely. And I think Profit First, you know, facilitates that so well, because, you know, knowing that what money is in your bank, and knowing how much belongs to you and how much belongs to the government and how much you can afford to spend. And it's, you know, so many businesses grow so quickly without knowing their numbers that actually they end up growing broke, so that they've got no spare cash. They've gone from being a smallish company with just a couple of employees and having a whale of a time to suddenly growing to having a dozen employees and being the least paid person in the company. Yes. Because they've just overspent. And Profit First is, you know, just a brilliant way of helping us to help businesses not to do that.
That's right. And to help ourselves too.
Yes,
it sounds like you're in that boat. I mean, your business grew quickly. In fact, you know, you're kind of cutting back a little bit on your marketing role. But what have you found up until this point worked the best in order to market your services?
Your customer service. So it's having clients want to shout about you enough that when somebody else says that they're, you know, they just get their year-end accounts done, or, you know, they're a their accountant's costing them a fortune, or for them to, in a pub, to turn around and say, oh, but I use such and such and they're absolutely fantastic, they do this for me, this for me, this for me. That's been our biggest growth, is our clients telling other people. It is networking as well still. I think people buy people. Changing my website to be all about me, which I actually hated, but understood that actually that's what it needs to be. To have a, you know, if your website is all about the accountancy or the bookkeeping practice, and you, there is no picture of you on there, there is no story of you on there, you are not going to sell. People buy people. Your website has to be about you. So,
yes, I agree. They need to feel like they can get to know you, and that you're the one who can solve their problems. So that's what they need to say. You know, and I skipped over that question. Your business started with payroll, really, kind of as a specialty. But now, does your practice have a specialty? Are you specialised at all?
We do still specialise in payroll. We actually do payroll for other accountants as well. So what we recognised is payroll is quite a cost, a commodity, and quite a lot of business. So people become accountants and they want to set up their own practice. In the qualifications, they've never learned payroll. It's not part of their thing. So when they become a practice, suddenly they've got this little arm of payroll that they don't even like or know very well. So what we do is we help them by having a practice that we do the payroll for other accountants, but their clients think that they're doing it because it comes from an email
subcontracted
address. So we still specialize in that. I was the first professional in the UK, and a kind of So I think we've kind of pushed, we've kind of found our niche in there as well. I'm actually helping some other accountants in the UK with Profit First, so that's really nice.
Beautiful. That's so really, it sounds like your specialty is Profit First. Is that whole methodology?
Yeah, it can make sure businesses pay themselves first.
That's a great specialty. Are there any specific tools, website software? I think we kind of mentioned it. Tools, software, or services that you'd recommend that have been a big help for you in your business?
Since using we've used Xero cloud-based software for a while now, and we're actually partners with Xero. Having their management accounts and things, that saved us a lot of time to be able to help businesses, because they don't have to take it off the system anymore, it's just there. And having like things like Receipt Bank and Zapier and all the little softwares and stuff that go into it, which I'm not going to pretend I'm an expert in, because I'm really not. The girls are all experts in them, and I know how much time they saved them. Having Infusionsoft, I know that's a big cost, but there is other ones available. But having your own CRM and having things, all our quote processes, everything is all automated. So when somebody has a quote, once I've done the meeting, I've done the quote itself and sent the proposal off, actually they go into Infusionsoft, they get tagged correctly, and it's all just done. It's not down to actually my time management to make sure that's followed up, and having that, and it doesn't have to be Infusionsoft, any CRM will do that, but having things automated, I mean, now we, our clients get reminders when their VAT is due, when their taxes are due, when their pay your rent's due, so we don't have to remind them, it's all in the system, and they get lovely reminders that just say, don't forget to pay your tax.
I didn't really realize that Infusionsoft, because I know about it from a marketing standpoint, but that it really works as a CRM as well.
It can really automate your business.
Does it allow, just, and you may or may not know this because this is techie, but you know, I always go to the techie side.
I will try.
Is with Infusionsoft, it's interesting, you're using it to send out the messages to remind the clients for the different deadlines. Does it know with the CRM if the client doesn't respond?
You can do, yeah, because there's a thing on it that says it doesn't matter whether they respond or not, but obviously it's up to the client to pay their own tax. So there is things like, say for instance, at the end of a quote process, if nobody's replied, so if I've done a quote and I've heard absolutely nothing, I've tried to ring, nothing's there, they get like a little feedback form that says, you know, please could you let us know why we weren't successful with the quote, and it's done on like a little form, and they think they're just typing into a, replying to an email, but it's a web form which actually then generates the Infusionsoft to tell me whether they've replied or not. And read it or everything, so it can on some occasions tell you whether they've responded. You've got to set it up that way. So.
Yeah. I know it's not an easy program to set up, likely most freelance bookkeepers are not going to be using Infusionsoft anytime soon. But
no, and I think a lot of them won't be as lucky as me, whereas my dad does all my Infusionsoft.
Oh, nice.
He's techie.
Yeah, you need a techie for that.
You do.
So what final advice would you give to freelance bookkeepers who are either just getting started or who may be struggling in their practice?
Join a mastermind group.
Yes.
I've got a peer group, the six of us. I'm the only northerner. If you haven't noticed, I've got a very northern English accent. The rest of them are all in the south, and I'm the only female. And and it's the actual support I get for ideas and things, because we're all very different, you know. Then none of those are service-based. Well, there's a business coach, there's a web designer, there's a telecoms engineer, there's two telecoms, one's more software, and there is a video expert as well. And we're all very different. And having that peer group, that we're all business owners, so they get it. Because, you know, sometimes if you've got friends that aren't business owners, they don't get it at all. But yeah, having the peer mastermind group has helped keep me sane. somewhere for me to get support from, get advice from, and the ideas that can come from just having a conversation around the table. It's like, you know, I don't just get ideas when it's my turn for my hour either. Mm-hmm. I get ideas when it's other people's turns and somebody says something, I'm like, oh, I could do that too.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, yeah, so join a mastermind group.
Yeah. And in your mastermind, how often do you meet?
We meet every 6 weeks.
Every 6 weeks? Ah, yeah. Interesting. Very good. Awesome. Yep. That was another thing I mentioned basically in the lesson too, is you can have a mastermind group, but also accountability. I don't know if you do that within your group at all, but that's a
big
help.
Yes. Because the six of us, we all have an accountability partner. So I will be ringing my accountability partner at 5 o'clock this evening. So
Excellent. Well, awesome. This has been a fantastic interview. Of course, I knew it would be, so that's why I asked you, Tracy.
I just feel like I've been talking to a friend. It's fine.
It is. Well, and we are friends. In fact, we really bonded on the train going back into New York City.
I know, there's a lovely train ride.
Yeah, it was great. So thank you so much for taking the time and spending it with us. And I'm sure that we will get lots of feedback from all the great tidbits that you have shared with us. And congratulations moving into your new office.
Thanks. Yes, I'll send you some photographs.
Yes, please do. Please do. Yeah.